Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to American Statesman Blog Talk Radio, the place where it's all about duty, honor, and country. Today is Monday, October 15th, 2012. My name is Sally Baptist, and I'll be hosting the show tonight, and my co-host Charlie Klein will be joining me shortly. Lots of things to talk about tonight. We've got, as I promised, I've been saying, we're going to finish up the Florida amendments, the constitutional constitutional amendments that are on the ballot. So we're definitely going to finish that up tonight. I want to make sure I put that out there. We've started the subject, and then other things came up several times, and so it didn't quite happen. But I want to make sure we finish that tonight. And but before we get into that, we'll talk about a few of the other things going on right now. And then people can call in, share their thoughts on what's going on. Call in number is 347-857-4364. 347-857-4364. Press 1 for the host queue. If you call in to listen, just don't press 1 and we won't bother you. Or if you want to speak on the air, make sure you press 1. That tells me your hand is up and you want to talk, and then we will get you out there and we'll see what you want to talk about. Excuse me. The other thing, starting off, just a reminder, this Saturday, October 20th, from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m., be in Tallahassee, Florida. Floridians need to be there, and we hope some others will be there from other parts of the country and the close states, excuse me, neighboring states. So I'm sorry about that. I don't mean to keep hacking in your ear there. The event on Saturday is Freedom from the United Nations Rally, Freedom from the UN Rally. If you believe that it's time for Americans to be sovereign and not under the control of the United Nations, then you need to be there. This is a major protest sending a very loud message to the gang of thugs in Tallahassee, Florida, that this is our state, our sovereignty, and we are not going to be under the dictate of the United Nations. And this all ties into Agenda 21, which, by the way, for those of you who did not listen on Thursday, we had a very lively discussion on Agenda 21, excuse me, and what it's doing here in Florida. And there were some. Rob Smith was one of the callers. I've known Rob Smith for many years, and he's definitely a conservative, so he is not pro-Agenda 21. He is not pro-socialism or anything crazy like that, but he just, in his own experience, doesn't see this as being something real. He doesn't think it's really happening here in Florida, and he wants people to give more proof to it. So unfortunately, he's not going to be able to be there next week because I think we could give him a lot of information. I have forwarded him various information on it. And, you know, the whole thing with Agenda 21 is it's not like they're going to go put a big old sign up on the highway and say, welcome to Agenda 21, United Nations, one world government is here. You know, they're not going to do it. It's a sleazy and indoctrination-type methodology of what Agenda 21 is all about. And I do believe it's here. I believe in the fall of Rome. And the same thing, history repeats itself. If the people, the citizenry, does not participate in the process and allows a few to take control. And that's really what's happened here. That's exactly what has happened here. Excuse me one minute. Sorry for this. I was up in New Jersey just recently, this past week. In fact, I got back to Orlando yesterday. And I think the difference in the climate, you know, I had frost on my car. I'm here down in Orlando, and I had frost on my car up there. So I think the difference in the weather is just giving me a little bit of a problem with my throat. So anyway, the whole thing with Agenda 21, yes, I believe it's real. I think there's evidence of it all over the place. Rob Smith doesn't. He doesn't see some of it. So, and we had a very lively discussion. Debate. I don't know what you want to call it, but I thought it was quite lively. So if you didn't listen to it on Thursday, please do. And, you know, if you believe the same as Rob Smith, that you don't think it's really happening or you don't see it, then, you know, you have a right to that, and maybe we can somehow give you some more information to show that it is really happening. But I will definitely be there Saturday at the Freedom from the UN rally. We're proposing, the people of Florida are proposing a bill similar to what Alabama has done. Other states have already passed bills saying that we are not going to be under the dictate of the United Nations. We're not going to be part of ICLEI, the International Environmental Council of Local, I said that wrong, ICLEI, International Council of Local Environmental Initiatives, which is all Agenda 21 stuff too. To say that the UN is going to tell us how we're going to live and what we're going to do, and just now they're trying to tax us too. I mean, the whole thing's nuts. But anyway, please plan to be there if you can. It's going to be on the front lawn of the old Capitol building, and that is this Saturday, 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. The other, let's see, well, you know, we had the debate, the VP debate, whatever you want to say on that. Here, you know, if anybody's got any comments. I watched part of it. I didn't watch the whole thing. I thought it was a waste of my time for the most part. Silliness. And then, of course, we have another debate tomorrow night. And we'll see how that's all going to play out. And this is going to be different because this is going to be the town hall format that is going to be more favorable to Obama, so they say. Whatever. Okay, we'll see what happens on that. I just recently got information, and I just could not believe this. I mean, this is how stupid, this is how sick racists have gotten in this country. We've got the Florida Board of Education. Apparently, the board passed this initiative last week. Fox News has an article out there on it. If you wanted to see it, you can go to foxnews.com or just do a search on, you know, Florida Board of Education is racist and see what pops up. The state of Florida is now going to say your reading level and your math level is going to be different based on what race you are. Asians, Hispanics, whites, and African Americans. So is this not stupid? And this No Child Left Behind thing was stupid to begin with to me. I didn't agree with it anyway. But it's just like, so now we're going to say, we've lowered the standard for everybody. The whole thing is just nuts. I'm still... I just recently heard about this and said, the state of Florida is racist based on your race as to what you're going to get for public education. How does this make any sense? Nuts to me. But anybody has any information on that and wants to talk about it, we can do that as well. The other thing, we'll see if there's any updates on Orange County corruption. I haven't read any articles on it, and I didn't hear it myself, but I was told that Orange County Mayor Teresa Jacobs is now out there putting all these proposals about no texting, no emails on their cell phones, whatever. All of a sudden, she's concerned about the Sunshine Law. And, you know, she was doing it all along when nobody was noticing. But now that she's got caught, now she's going to pretend to be some ethical, moral saint out there who needs to be fired. She needs to be removed from office. What she did was wrong. She violated, and she knows she violated the state sunshine law. Excuse me. Please give me a break that she didn't know what she was doing was wrong and that the other commissioners didn't know it. All three of them that I know of who have admitted to sending and receiving texts from special interest during a public meeting should be removed from office, period. And you know what? If I had all the money in the world and, you know, money was no object, the time was no object, I'd file my own suit against every single one of them. But I can't do that because I can't do it all. We need other people out there. We do know some lawsuits are being filed. And everybody should be pounding Governor Rick Scott's office to remove these people, every one of them. What about Pam Bondi? What is she supposed to be doing? To me, she's been totally useless. I won't vote for her again based on what she's recently done. But what about her? Doesn't it matter these people violated the Sunshine Law? They need to be removed. Now. That's all there is to it. So anyway, that's another issue. So if anybody's got any more current updates on that, we can talk about that. And let's see, the last thing I'm going to mention right now, and then I'll go to Charlie and see what he's got going on. And it looks like we have John out there, too, so we'll see if John's got anything to talk about, but He hasn't hit the button to speak yet, but I'll go to Charlie in just a minute here. The other thing, as I was driving back, well, first off, I have to make a couple of jokes about New Jersey, okay? When you people from New Jersey come down to Florida, I now understand why you drive a little better, understand. I mean, I've been in Jersey before, but I had never been where I was in this part of it where there's no such thing as a left turn. They have these loops everywhere. And if you happen to, well, first off, if you're visiting the area and you're going to go back the way you came kind of thing, that doesn't work. So you'll be stuck in the left lane when you need to be in the right lane because you have to make a loop and to go left. You have to go right so that you can go left. I'm sure there's all sorts of jokes people could make on the politics of that. You have to be right to go left or something. But it's just nuts. And so if you did like I did a couple of times, I was in the wrong lane at the wrong time, and you have to drive like 10, 20 miles out of your way to get back around. It's just totally nuts the way they have it. And so when they come down to Florida, you know, and they feel like they have to cross 5 lanes of the interstate to get off, it's because they're so afraid they won't have another exit for 20 miles or something. But anyway, so I thought that was kind of funny. It's no wonder why they drive the way they do. Totally nuts. So you want to talk about wasting gas and wasting time and ruining the roads and everything else, go take a ride in Jersey. And then New Jersey is also where you're not allowed to pump your own gas. You go to, pull up to a station, looks like just any other good old self-service station anyplace else in the country, but you have to stand there and watch them while they pump the gas in your car. They don't do anything else. They don't wash the windshield. They don't, you know, any of that stuff. Full-service stations went out so long ago, and it really is just kind of funny when I said, oh, I have to stand there while you pump the gas. And then, of course, somebody made a joke to me, it's because people in Jersey don't know how to pump gas. I don't know. Anyway, I thought that was just kind of an interesting thing of my trips, the joys of traveling on the highways. But on the way back was the important part. On the way back in Virginia and in North Carolina, two different things, one was a semi-truck that was parked on the side, and another was a billboard, stop the I-95 tolls. Toll is a four-letter word for tax, people. Tea parties, would you wake up out there? Toll is a four-letter word for tax. Well, as anybody who knows me knows, I have been fighting the tolls, the toll abuse. It's nothing but a highway scam. It's a scam against the people, and it impacts everybody. Everybody's cost of living goes up from it. It's despicable, and it's nothing but money grabbing. And in the case of Virginia, this is a Republican who's doing it, good old Governor McDonald. He's out there. He's ready to take your money any which way he can, but, of course, he claims he doesn't believe in tax increases. It's a tax increase, people. Putting tolls on there, it's a tax increase, plus it's a cost of living increase. So not to mention a variety of other things that impacts. So it's absolutely ridiculous. And I have been, I started today reaching out to some of these groups, and there's actually a Facebook page out there, Stop I-95 Tolls. And I'm going to try to have a Thursday show. I'm planning on talking about the I-4 tolls, getting into more discussion about that. Because I want to put tolls on I-95 here in Florida. I mean, I-95 runs from Miami up to Portland, Maine. It's across, you know, the whole eastern coast here. And they want to put another tax on it. We already pay so many transportation taxes. But because they're reckless with our money, they think they can, they believe most of us are too stupid to know the difference. They say, oh, this is a user fee. What is a gas tax? A gas tax is a user fee that has less than 1% collection. But no, you'd rather hire government employees, the IRS. Toll roads are the IRS of the highway system, people. Just think of it as an IRS booth out there taking taxes from you. And that's what it's about. And so they're going to hire how many people to take money from us? And for less? I mean, it's going to cost them somewhere to the neighborhood of 20% to take the money from us, where we're paying it at the pump for 1%. It's a scam. Totally a scam in every which way. So anyway, but I found that very interesting that now they're, you know, I've wanted so much here in Florida to put a big old poster, a billboard up there about the I-4 tolls and the I-95 tolls, stop the scamming of the highway robbery toll scam, get Micah out of office because he's part of the problem. John Micah, who's the chair of the House Transportation Committee, he loves to waste billions of dollars on high-speed trains to nowhere, and then he wants to put tolls on the highways so we have to pay for his stupid games that he plays on his trains. And so he needs to go too, which I did put that message out there to a couple of the groups so they understand part of where the problem comes from. And but I'll keep you posted. We definitely need to shut down the interstate tolls. Toll abuse needs to stop altogether. But now you've got the Republicans, the so-called fiscal conservatives, Republicans, the rhinos, out there saying, well, we can't tax them over here, so we're going to slip it in over here. We're going to tax the toll roads, put the tolls out there. That way we get the money, but they're too stupid to know any better. This is what the Republicans think of taxpayers. They're just too stupid. So that's their mentality. Anyway, on that note, let me go ahead and go to Charlie. Well, I've been talking for 15 minutes. I don't usually talk quite that long in the beginning. But let's go to Charlie and see how he's doing. Hey, Charlie.
Yes, you do talk that long.
No, I don't. I happen to watch the clock. You're the one who takes 20 minutes. But that's another story. Any rate, right now it's 7:15. Let's see how long it takes you.
I'm done.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, does anybody believe that? You have no updates on the Orange County stuff?
Oh, well, yeah. Well, you hit on something that updated something else that we've been doing. You said, what was that thing about discrimination regarding the schools and all this type of thing?
Mm-hmm.
The school boards, right? Uh-huh.
The Florida Board of Education has passed a new standard for reading and math based on race.
Ooh, yeah, I've been hearing about that, and I heard it on Mel Robbins' show, and I heard it on Neil Bortz. So I'll tell you what, it's getting out there, and I'll tell you what, the elected officials, they are not elected officials. They are in there for their own personal agendas, apparently, and not that of what we the people expected them to do. So let's throw something in there that's been bugging me for a long time. This goes back to about 1954 or maybe 1974. I can't remember what, but it also has to do with our We the People versus the ballot box establishment lawsuit that we still have to file. In there, we found out that it cost $10,440 to file to run for office in the state of Florida for Congress, of which approximately two-thirds of that goes to the Executive Committee of the party. So as a reminder to the people, if you belong to the Democrat Party or the Republican Party and you want to run for Congress or the Senate, whether Congress is both the House and the Senate, you have to pay $10,440 just to get your name on the ballot. If you are not the chosen one. If you are the chosen one, the party helps you. The party helps advertise, get your name out there, and all this time they send a word out that we like this guy, we like Dan Webster, and we're going to make sure that he runs again because he does what we want him to do. And there you are, wanting to be and bring honesty and integrity the way our founding fathers developed this country of an honest nature so that it is totally respected by all other countries. And now we have devil's advocates, as I call them. But the whole thing about it is you get to pay the $10,440, and then of that, approximately two-thirds goes to the party. That's poll tax. It's an unreasonable charge for you to run for office in your country and to serve your country. It is discriminatory also, and it could be considered prejudicial because of the time frame that it was imposed. Meaning that it's been like this for a long time. And every legislative session has approved these charges. The last one was in 2011 when Pam Bundy took over. That's the latest update to it, and it's still in there. So what do I look at this and I say, why did our elected officials in the Republican and Democrat Party impose such a high filing fee to run for Congress? Could it be that they did not want a bunch of minorities running for office? Because, you know, if it happened before 66 and before Martin Luther King, I mean, a lot of them had a hard time even getting themselves to the polls to vote. So I'm just wondering if that would possibly show and be a bearing on who we have in our offices now. Discrimination hidden by the legislative action. Now that is something else, and I believe it's something that we need to really take a good look at, because I'm sure that there are some people out there in the minority section who deserve and who have the funds or have the could get the backing with a class action suit to go after the school board on the state level and bring them down to the point where they start working for the good of all children. In fact, it should be mandated that children who are having a hard time will be concentrated on with the parents, getting the parents involved. And if the parents don't get involved, then the parents can go to jail for failing to be involved. That means making sure that the child does their homework. And if there's no homework, that they make sure the child has homework so that they can bring them up to a better standard. iPods, iTunes, and all that is not studying. That is not homework. Homework is carrying the books home and studying for at least 2 to 3 hours after you get home or early in the morning. That brings out a better, how would you say, citizenship later on. It brings people up who have some knowledge of this country and its history. We have school boards now that don't want the children to know about World War II or the wars that we've been through, the Civil War, the Revolutionary War, World War I, World War II, Korean War, Vietnam War. Every war that we are in has been called upon by Congress in our administrations to protect we the people so that we are remain a free country and so that we can help other countries remain free from tyranny. So the whole thing about this, ladies and gentlemen, is it looks like discrimination, it looks like prejudicial treatment in reverse, going back to the old days, reversing the anti-prejudice doctrine that we got from 1966 on. Going back to it, to deprive minorities the education that they deserve by setting up lower standards for them when they are quite capable of doing just what any other person in this great country does, because God did not change the brains from one race to another. He gave them all the same type of brain. We just have to develop it. They have to develop it. But getting back to that, we now have them in violation of the, as far as I'm concerned, in prejudicial action in regards to running for office with the high cost of getting your name on the ballot. And so it looks like the Democrat Party and Republican Party and now the school board, who are generally members of the Democrat-Republican Party, need to be all brought to court. And that's once you get it to court, it's going to go, it may take a few years, but by George, ladies and gentlemen, prejudice is just like a hate crime. And if they don't make a change real quick, once you file the papers or once you start talking this up, then they deserve to go to prison for the rest of their lives. But I would say that if somebody started a lawsuit and it got on the news media, that the school boards would change their tune and they would do it in a heartbeat. Back to you, Sally.
Well, you did pretty good there. It was 8 minutes. So that was,
I know,
that was
I'm
short.
Looking at my computer. I'm looking at my computer. It's 8 minutes.
You didn't dare to say, okay. He acts like he was going to be, oh, okay. Anyway, those of you who listen all the time know how much he talks. Come on. Not to mention he talks much slower, so I say a lot more and a lot less time. But everybody complains I talk too fast. Okay, let's see here. Yes. Are you going to say something?
No, I'm doing fine. I'm going to put you back on speakerphone, okay?
Okay, let's see. The other is, there's one of George Washington's quotes here that I happen to like. I can find it again. I was going to mention it. There we go. It's what it truly goes back to what's a statesman and what's a politician and why we have the crap we have today. Okay. I have no other view than to promote the public good and and am unambitious of honors, not founded in the approbation of my country, George Washington. So it was never about honors, but you think about the ones who are in public office today, they all want a library named after them, they all want a highway named after them, they all want, the only thing they don't want specifically named after them is a tax, with the exception of Dan Webster. He likes having a toll route named after him, so Dan, this is in Florida, Congressman Dan Webster has a tax named after him, but most of them try to avoid that one. But when it comes to everything else, it's all about them. It's all about what they want. It's despicable. And then the other one is, this is Thomas Jefferson. I have the consolation of having added nothing to my private fortune during my public service and of retiring with my hands as clean as they are empty. And see, this is what statesmen are. This is what people who are supposed to represent the people, not the sleazy scumbags we have in office today. And so just remember that, you know, if they've been there for too long, just get rid of them. They don't need to be there. We need citizen representation. Fire any of them that have been there more than two terms, fire them. And for some of those, even one term. Get rid of them. Get people who actually believe in the Constitution, who actually want to uphold the Constitution, something that doesn't seem to happen too much these days. And, I mean, with me, it's when in doubt, oust them out. And if they've been there more than two terms, fire them. They don't need to be there. And, you know, Charlie mentioned the variety of lawsuits. There's lots of things that we need to go after these people for. We need everybody to go out there and take up some of the issues that you're annoyed about, that you think are wrong. I mean, with me, I'm annoyed with a lot of them. I don't deny that fact. And again, if time and money were no objects, that courthouse would be overwhelmed. I'd have to go invest in paper or something for everything I would be filing, because they have violated our federal constitution, our state constitution, the local charters. You know, Jacobs, Mayor Jacobs, Teresa Jacobs here in Orange County, she needs to be taken to court. She needs to be charged for what she's done. She knew what she did was wrong. She didn't care, but she got caught. The same with Orange County Commissioner Jennifer Thompson. She knew what she did was wrong. She didn't care. She thought she could get away with it. She thought she was above the law. She needs to be taken to court, and she needs to pay the price for what she did. And the same is true with the other Orange County Commissioner, Scott Boyd. And, you know, it's the same old thing. Don't play dumb like you didn't know what you were doing was wrong. You know, if what you were doing was right, you would have said, "Oh, wait a minute, folks! I got a message here from the Chamber of Commerce. Oh, they don't want to do this." You would have shared that as part of the public discussion. Except that you were being devious, deceitful, dishonest, unethical, violating the Sunshine Law, and you knew it. Don't play dumb. I mean, I'll say that some of the things you people do are really stupid, but they're usually self-serving. They're stupid and they're harmful to the people, but they're self-serving for you, because they're going to secure your campaign funds or whatever it is you're trying to do, or give you some type of a stock in a company, which, speaking of which, and talking transportation and I-95, let's talk about good old John Micah again, which I did share the fact with him. John Micah has nothing to do with improving transportation. It's all about his family getting more money and, you know, being friends with CSX and these people. And I put it out there today. It's like, okay, and this is true with all these politicians. Micah, you have to go and investigate each one of them, their families. How do their families or their relatives, cousins, whatever else, how have they benefited indirectly from these congressional leaders, people who are elected to public office? I call it money laundering, what happened with Micah and his daughter. For John Micah's daughter, for her company to get money, earmarked money, to the tune of $13 million, wasn't that just money laundering? Wasn't that a very indirect way of giving it to John Micah? Isn't that money laundering bribery? I think it is. Well, whatever. But you think about the various ways this happens across the board. So when these people act like they care about you while they're talking to their their close friends at the Chamber of Commerce or whoever else. It's all because they're willing and dealing in the background. They've got their own sidebars going on. They're not working for you. And that's why these people have to go. And you got to take action against them. I'll do what I can to help anybody who's out there taking the effort to do it, the initiative to do it. I can't do it. I can't do it all. Charlie and I can't do it all. I am definitely focusing my efforts on We the People versus the Ballot Box Establishment, finishing up what we've done with this budget, and then the toll road scam. What they're doing with toll taxes and the infrastructure. The highway transportation thing covers many aspects. Illegal public-private partnerships, the collusion of the government and the private sector. Selling off our highway public assets to foreign entities. That's not right. And then again, it's a tax. It's an unfair tax, discriminates against lower-income people, and it makes everybody's cost of living go up. I mean, everything to do with these toll roads is wrong. It's nothing but a money grab from self-serving politicians, and we've got to stop it. So I was quite happy to see this billboard, and I actually did take a picture of it, and I'll put it out there for the next show, that they have a gigantic billboard telling people to stop the I-95 tolls. And we have to do that here in Florida, too, because John Micah, he has to find a way to pay for his trains to nowhere, and that's a big part of it. So he's out there promoting tolls on the interstates, even though in the past he said he didn't believe in it. But he's a rhino, and he's worried about taking care of his family, getting his money, and being friends with CSX. He doesn't really care about transportation. All you got to do is look at TSA, and you'll see he doesn't care about transportation. And you see what he's done with transportation. You know he doesn't care about public money. So, yes, people say, oh, you complain about John Micah. Hey, he's the chair of the Transportation Committee. Everything he does with transportation is screwed up and against the people. What do you want me to say? I don't like the guy. He needs to be dethroned. He's the one who's been there. He's a fossil who's been there for 20 years. He's part of the problem. He needs to go. And let's see, what else? Well, Charlie, if there's anything else you want to say before we get into these amendments, speak now. Looks like you're not going to. Okay. Les, are you there? Okay. A couple weeks back, I guess it's
fine. Yeah, I'm here.
Well, I was just going to say, was there anything else you want to mention before we get into the amendments? And we do want to have a discussion dissecting what these amendments are.
Go ahead.
Okay. So anyway, last time we talked about the, for the most part, every one of these amendments, they started out with 12, but they removed one of them, so it's down to 11 amendments to the Florida State Constitution. These are all things they tried to pass through the legislative process and didn't get done. So they said, well, you know, we can't get it done this way, so let's try to screw up the Constitution and do it. And I take, as Chris Ann Hall, the constitutional attorney, said, most of these should have been handled through the legislative process, not through a constitutional amendment. We need to be very careful about changing the Constitution, the state Constitution. There needs to be much more of a discussion, in my opinion. There's been little to no discussion, at least not from local media that I've heard, about what these amendments are. I've heard more about these amendments on Fox News than I have from any of the local news, which I find kind of interesting. So the whole point is we shouldn't be playing around with the state constitution. When you go out there and change the state constitution, it's much more difficult to repeal it and get it out and correct it, to fix it. So these things, as a blanket statement, I say vote no on all of them. Just, this isn't the way you do this stuff. Now, the first one is about the health care services. This is the only one I think I was somewhat thinking maybe to vote for, because it was supposed to, as I read it and understand it, it's supposed to help keep us out of Obamacare, state sovereignty on the health care issues. But there are some risks to it, but it would support the fact we don't want Obamacare. That was the only thing about that one, and that's the only one I have truly considered possibly voting for. The rest of them are definitely no. Charlie and I had an interesting discussion about the veterans, disabled veterans due to combat injury. And Tom Pastore was even talking to me a little bit about this, but I don't know if he's going to be calling in tonight. And the thing is, it's Tom Pastore was taking it as you shouldn't be discriminating against the veterans for any way, shape, or form kind of thing, where this is based on whether you were here when you went into the military, you were a Florida resident, all these weird things about how you're going to give a property discount to veterans. And I think the way it's being handled here, I don't believe it's a constitutional issue. I don't think this should be in the state constitution. And Charlie, you're more than welcome to chime in if you think it should be. But the whole way they're handling the veterans piece, I think, is incorrect, and it shouldn't be in the state constitution. State government revenue limitation. Let's see if I can. And the other thing that we talked about on all of these.
Did you read the veterans, the ballot language on the veterans?
I did last time, but we can take another look at it here.
Yeah, read it again to remind the people what it says exactly. Okay.
Yep. Let's see here. Let me get to it. Computer. I really do need a new computer, but I don't have enough money. Let's see here. Get back to them. This was number two, I think it was. The state constitution number two. Okay. Excuse me. Okay. Constitutional amendment, it's Article 7, Section 6, and Article 12, Section 32. Veterans disabled due to combat injury, homestead property tax discount. Proposing an amendment to Section 6 of Article 7 and the creation of Section 32 of Article 12 of the state constitution to expand the availability of property discount on homesteads of veterans who became disabled as a result of combat injury to include those who were not Florida residents when they entered into the military and scheduled the amendment to take effect January 1st, 2013. And let's see here. Okay. Chris Ann Hall was saying, interestingly, Amendment 2 exemplifies the very argument against legislation through constitutional amendments. On November 7th, 2006, Florida voters approved a constitutional amendment known as Amendment 7. This amendment provided a property tax discount on homestead property owners by eligible, veterans. To be eligible, a veteran must have an honorable discharge from military service, be at least 65 years old, be partially disabled with a permanent service-connected disability, all or a portion of which must be combat-related, and must have been a Florida resident at the time of entering military service. That part, been a resident of Florida at the time of entering service. Apparently, when this amendment was designed, several provisions were left out for whatever reason. These omissions have now come to light, and the only way to fix them is through an amendment process. If the original provision had been passed through the appropriate channels of legislation, a simple amendment to the statute could have easily been passed while the legislature was in session. Now Floridians will incur not only the cost of employing our legislators to do their job, but the cost of amending the Constitution when the legislators don't want or are unable to do their job. A vote for yes on Amendment 2, if you support this, here's what's going to happen, would give the existing homestead tax exemption to disabled veterans who were not Florida residents at the time of entering the military service, would reduce property tax revenues for schools, local governments, by an estimated $15 million combined over the first 3 years of implementation and an estimated $7.6 million each year thereafter, would expand the property tax exemption for some disabled veterans who are not currently eligible for similar property tax exemptions. So is this going to encourage veterans to come to Florida? I don't know. But as you can see, there's definitely going to be a price to pay for it. $15 million for the first 3 years and $7.6 million. In all likelihood, that'll be higher than that because most of the time on these estimates, they tend to run low. So it's definitely going to be a tax increase for the rest of us. And more importantly is, as Chris Ann Hall said here, this should not be a constitutional amendment. This should have been done through the normal means of the legislature. And so while Charlie is, I think, in favor of it, I'm not sure. I know last time we talked, you were in favor of it. I don't know if you've considered the fact this isn't something that should be the Constitution. And Tom Pastore had many issues with the way the whole thing was being done, treating veterans differently. Veterans are veterans. They should be treated the same kind of thing, not playing the games, which they still do.
Well, I'm agreeing with Tom. I mean, we want to do whatever we can for the veterans. However, the thing that we have to do is we have to make sure that it doesn't create an influx of veterans from other states coming in here just because they're going to get a better tax exemption and that type of thing. But the thing is that we want to be fair to them. The legislative process is designed to take care of situations for the good of the people, and the petition process should be pushed a lot more in the state of Florida, to where when we say we want something, we do it, but it doesn't have to be a constitutional amendment to provide the veterans with the coverage or the tax exemptions that they're talking about. Because there are some veterans who are, yes, injured and all this, and they're getting plenty of benefits from the federal government. I am for whatever we can do for our veterans, regardless of their injuries. However, in this case here, I agree that it should not be on as a constitutional amendment. It should be done in the legislature, because 10 years down the road, there may be something else that comes up that they have to make a change, even 2 years down the road. And therefore, it should not have to go through the petition process to have it changed. Our state legislature makes it so difficult for we the people to correct the wrongs of the legislature with the number of petitions we have to sign on a state basis, over 650,000. That costs we the people, the true government of America, with a huge expense to put a petition on the ballot. It should be the other way around. It should require the House and the Senate of the state, 80%, to get a petition on the ballot. And it should only cost the citizens in the state of Florida something like less than 5,000 people to put something decent, because it is always checked by the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court of the state of Florida is supposed to make sure that it is a constitutional amendment to the Constitution, and that it doesn't violate the federal Constitution nor the state Constitution. So I am in agreement that we should not approve this as a constitutional amendment, but that our legislators should be mandated to make sure that they do something, the proper thing, for our veterans, and invite the veterans to discuss the situation, because every veteran who is injured has a different type of a situation. We could wind up with a huge number of people coming down here, and all of a sudden it would impact the various school districts. But then again, I would not deny any veteran the right to live anywhere in this great country, since he was willing to serve and was injured serving this country. He is not like somebody, fat cat, sitting in Washington, D.C., getting $174,000 a year for doing 108 days' work and then ignoring the constituents who they work for. Congress should be at, there you go, we'll put that on as a, if that passes as a constitutional amendment, Sally, then what we'll do is put a constitutional amendment in there that all congressmen in the state of Florida will only receive $6,000 a month for their service to the people while in Congress or in the Senate. How does that sound? Then all of that $102,000 can go to helping the veterans. Now, that would be a nice trade-off, I think.
I think it's time to cut the entitlement programs of Congress. We definitely don't want to get mix up the federal versus the state, and this is obviously the state.
No, I'm being facetious on that last part.
Yes, I know. But more to two things I was going to mention.
No.
When we talked about this last time, I was saying it should be all at a federal level. We should have the proper type of treatment for veterans at the federal level, so it doesn't matter where they live. You shouldn't have to have a state constitution, a constitutional amendment, or any of that. We should, as a society, as a country, we should be supporting the veterans across the board the way we what's appropriate. And so, again, the sad part is there's going to be people who are going to read this and think, well, God, we've got to help out the veterans. And so, because it really sounds like a good thing to do in that sense, but it doesn't belong in the state constitution. This is where you have the evildoers of Tallahassee, Florida, the gang of thugs, who are going to manipulate the process, knowing that or take advantage of those who aren't thinking about this as a constitutional amendment or aren't even understanding that piece of it and try to manipulate the law that way because they couldn't get it done the way they were supposed to. So it's disgusting, but then again, government's disgusting. The other thing on the veterans I want to make sure we mention, because I heard this the last couple of days. I've heard it around probably for the last couple of weeks, but apparently it's getting hotter and hotter, that King Obama is trying to block the ways for the veterans to vote. He's making it more and more difficult for veterans to vote, and I think that is so despicable. This is what King Obama is really about. He doesn't believe in this country, and that's another thing. You know, that's the kind of stuff. That's what we should be protecting the rights of the veterans here, to try and make it more difficult for them to vote. I think it's awful. I don't know how much you
agree
about that, Charles.
If he thinks that he is going to stop our military from voting, he's got another guest coming, because that would be a total violation of the law, of the laws of the land, and that is what he is supposed to uphold with his oath of office. And the whole thing about his oath of office, he's been violating it so much, that means Congress. Right now, Congress should be going after him just for the mere attempt to try to stop our military from voting. Congress is now in collusion with the president if they don't do anything in an expeditious manner, which means they are now, not only did they fail to pass a budget properly for the country, they are now failing to uphold the laws of the land for the benefit of our true servants of the people, our military. And that, Sally, I think, is a big one. And we'll just have to see how it plays out, because if any of our military are disenfranchised anywhere in this country because of the failure of the supervisor of elections, then that means we have a major problem, and it starts with Congress, both houses of Congress and the administration, and it may include the Supreme Court. Which means it may mean we may have to go ahead and take back our country in the way that we don't want to do it. We can do it through the courts right now. We can do it through the courts right now. But Congress had better start waking up to the fact that they work for we the people, and not themselves, and not their greedy special interest friends.
Okay. And on that note, we will get to item three we discussed. And again, I'm trying to go over these first couple a little bit faster because we had kind of gone over these to begin with. This one here, and the comment we'll make about all of these, including the ones on the Orange County referendum as well, is the language is so squirrely on these things. The language is written to try and confuse people. That's why it's really nice that Chris Ann Hawley, constitutional attorney, actually translated some of this mess for us to make some sense of it. But number three, this is constitutional amendment, number three, Article 7, Sections 1 and 19, Article 12, Section 32, State Government Revenue Limitation. Now, limitation by itself sounds really nice, but let's get into this, what it really means. This proposed amendment to the state, and to me, I don't know why they don't say what it is. Here they're saying the proposed amendment to the state. They ought to just say what it is. The proposed amendment to the state constitution replaces the existing state revenue limitation based on Florida personal income. Okay, replaces the existing state revenue limitation based on Florida personal income growth with a new state revenue limitation based on inflation and population changes. Under the amendment, state revenues, as defined in the amendment, collected in excess of revenue limitations, must be deposited into the budget stabilization fund until the fund reaches its maximum balance, and therefore shall be used for the support and maintenance of public schools by reducing the minimum financial effort required from the school districts for participation in a state-funded education finance program, or if the minimum financial effort is no longer required, return to taxpayers. The legislature may increase the state revenue. Here we go. Here's the goodie. The legislature may increase the state revenue limitation to a bill approved by a supermajority vote of each house of the legislature. The legislature may also submit a proposed increase in the state revenue limitation to the voters. The legislature must implement this proposed amendment by general law. The amendment will take effect upon approval by the electors and will first apply to the 2014-2015 fiscal year. Now, let's see here. I'm going back to Chris Ann's interpretation of this, Chris Ann Hall. This amendment is an example of the legislature compensating for failed legislation. Beginning in 2008, several proposals similar to Amendment 3, and sometimes referred to as the Taxpayers' Bill of Rights, were defeated in the legislature. So once again, the taxpayers are getting double-dipped for something the legislature could not enact. Not only that, since this is an amendment and not a legislation, making any necessary adjustments to the formula enacted by this amendment would be slow, costly, and inconvenient. A vote yes for this would replace the existing state revenue limitation based on personal income growth with a new limitation based on population and inflation. Let's see if she has anything else on this one. Okay. This appears to be a form of baseline budgeting. Yeah, baseline budgeting to me is never good. This is what they do up in D.C. They have this 8% baseline, so they automatically increase the amount 8% every single year, regardless of what they need or do, and that's a big part of the problem we have up there. Baseline budgeting is when the budget contains a built-in consistent increase in taxes allotted to the budget. Seems to be unclear why we would indeed need a more restrictive form of taxation. Seems unclear that this would be indeed a more restrictive. No, it doesn't look like it's more restrictive to me either. A tax rate based upon personal income growth is reflective of the prosperity of the state. Okay. When revised, the current formula regarding government revenues, taxes, licenses, fees, fines, or charges for services, toll roads. Other states have attempted this formula through legislation and had to revise the legislation multiple times in order to get the formula right. Since this is an amendment to the Constitution and not legislation, the adjusting formula would be slow and very costly. Okay, so it seems to me pretty easy on that one. No. Nope, they don't need that. They can do it through the legislative process or they can forget it. Now, let's see here.
I think we need to get in touch with Chris Ann Hall, or even let's go Save America Foundation, and let's do a petition to clean up all of the ballot language for the next election.
Oh, definitely.
Like they did in California.
Definitely. It shouldn't have to be this convoluted.
Yeah, I'm
but
just saying.
I'm
saying in California they did it back in the 60s because
right.
It was so people just complained because they couldn't understand it, and they made it where the ballot language had to have everything in it that the people would be voting on clearly defined, so that the people would know that yes, this is pertaining to the school district, this is pertaining to books for the kids, and blah 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 blah, and then they would do the summary. And the summary would explain further detail so that the people would understand why they're asking for this additional 1% or increase in sales tax or whatever it is that they're asking for. And it would be, and in the summary, it would also state that this money will be audited and the people will be able to check on it or whatever. I mean, they had to really make sure that whatever was in the ballot language coincided with the summary and vice versa. And it could be read. It could be read by a high school or grade school dropout, just an average intelligent person, somebody who just knew how to read. And it passed. And California didn't have any problems after that, that I know of.
Okay, and I totally agree. We talked about this last time, too. And the ones that they have for Orange County are even worse. But, I mean, it is so. The whole intention is to confuse people. I mean, it's not to serve. That's not what the point is. And the other part of this, personally, I think there should be a limit. I don't think you should be able to put 11 stinking amendments on one ballot like this. They do it to confuse people, to frustrate people. And, you know, here in Florida, there's been plenty of talk. Because of all these ballot amendments on here, and, of course, in Orange County, the local initiatives, too, that it's going to take forever to go through the voting line. People who are not prepared, it's going to take longer no matter what, because now instead of feeding one piece of paper through the scanner to read your vote, you're going to have to feed three or four, whatever, however they do it. I think it's going to be three on the final ballot.
Yeah. I do not believe that we should restrict the people's petition. But we should restrict those coming out of the legislative, because the legislative should be able to handle most of the problems during the legislative session if they were not thinking only of themselves and their special interests, but if they were thinking of the good of the country, the state, and the people. But if you and I and a bunch of other people came up with a bunch of petitions that we say, oh, we got to clarify this and we got to correct this because it's going to save us $100 million in 10 years or whatever it is, well, we may wind up with 20 at the very beginning, and then eventually we'll get it cut down to where it's only going to be 5 or 6. But at the beginning, we need to do the petition process to make it easier for us. We need a petition to reduce the $650,000 down to a reasonable amount, and then we need to get the wording done. Those are the two petitions, and I'm going to contact Save America Foundation to see if Fred will be interested in spearheading that.
Okay. And again, cleaning up the process, definitely. But, and I guess, I'm not one to try to set the limitations in the same sense of blocking people from doing stuff, because that isn't it. But at the same time, what they have done here, this is chaos.
Yeah.
This is chaos in every respect. And if the amendments were clearly and plainly spoken, same for the Orange County crap, if it was out there in plain basic language, people could read it and understand it without having to spend time. Look how much time we spend on it. We actually get more engaged and involved in stuff than most people do.
Right.
So the average voter, typical voter does. The what's going to happen?
Act of deception.
Okay, go ahead.
That's an act of deception. And that's a violation of the people's rights to try to deceive them into voting on something that they have no knowledge of. So that is those are deceptive petitions. I mean, deceptive amendments. Go ahead.
Okay. Just want to make sure you're finished. They are. And the other part. I mean, if these were the 11 amendments that you could read over and clearly understand and make a decision, yes or no. But, at the same time, I mean, there's two sides to this issue. If you're going to be a voter, you need to be responsible and you need to take the time to learn a little bit on the issues before you go there. That's the part that we know doesn't happen. And in this case here, I mean, it takes a lot of time to try and figure out what this stuff is. And if we didn't have Chris Ann Hall out there dissecting it for us and some of these other groups that have done stuff out there, trying to understand what this stuff is, it's gobbledygook. It's legal mumbo-jumbo. And again, it's like you said, it's all an intention to deceive. It's an intention to confuse people. And in this case here, how many people are not going to vote because they see this mess and they're not going to stand in line that long. Which, I mean, there's a part of the problem. I personally do not believe in all this early voting. I don't think you should be voting two weeks in advance. I would rather see some kind of a 24-hour window that was across the country. Because if it's 24 hours, you got every hour of the day you can go, whatever your schedule is, 24 hours, and all the votes would be, people would have the right to vote at the same time across the country, and the vote would stop at the same time, and not all these stupid games they play with the media when they start calculating, well, so-and-so has got it here, they've declared this one here, they've declared that one. Oh, none of those other states even matter, we're not going to bother to count them, we'll worry about those later, because those don't matter. All this other nonsense for the whole process. But they were saying here in Florida, this was, again, Fox News talking about this, saying they expect voter turnout to be less because of how confusing and tedious this ballot is. So when they went out there, and my own agreeing with you, it's all an attempt to manipulate and confuse the public. This wasn't to serve the public interest. And literally, you think about how long do you think it's going to take? I mean, I know how long it takes just in a regular election when you don't have all this kind of stuff, where you only have one or two referendum items out there that are a little bit more simple, but not this, but nothing simple. How long do you think it's going to take for people to go through, even if you know, even when you know these issues and you already know how you're going to mark it, it's going to take longer to fill out the ballot, and then it's going to take longer to feed it through the machine. How much time do you think it's going to take here in Florida, Central Florida, to vote? Do you have any idea what your thoughts are on that, Charlie, how long it's going to take to vote?
Oh, I would say that about 5 minutes per person.
Oh, no, I don't think so.
No, maybe 10 minutes, because the person is going to go in there, and they're going to look at that stuff, and they're going to say, I'm not going to vote on that. I don't understand it. The heck with it.
Well, yeah, there's going to be some that will strictly vote for the local candidate thing, you know, the candidates themselves, and then ignore everything else.
They'll ignore the rest of it. And then who knows what happens to those unmarked ballots when they get over there.
I'm sorry, what was that?
Who knows what happens to the unmarked ballots when it gets over to the deal. You know, we have this suspected corruption and all that time, suspected corruption.
Oh, yeah. Well, we know Bill Cowles doesn't worry about the machines that don't work. He thinks that's okay if they don't work correctly. So he's another one who needs to go, too. He needs to be investigated. But, you know, the cronyism that doesn't seem to go after these people. So, okay, well, anyway, that's that part. Let's go to number four here. Let's see. Property tax limit. Okay, Constitution Amendment 4, Section 7, excuse me, Article 7, Sections 4, 6, Article 12, Sections 27, 32, 33. Property tax limitations, property value declined, reduction for non-homestead assessment increases, delay of scheduled repeal. Okay, this would amend Florida Constitution Article 7, Section 4, Taxation Assessments, and Section 6, let's see, Section 6, Homestead Exemptions. It would also amend Article 12, Section 27, and add Sections 32 and 33 relating to the schedule for amendments. Two, in certain circumstances, the law requires the assessed value of homestead and specifically non-homestead property to increase. Okay, in certain circumstances, the law requires the assessment value of homestead. And, of course, this part is kind of interesting. It specified non-homestead property. So value of homestead versus non-homestead, I think, was kind of interesting. To increase when the just value of the property decreases. Therefore, an amendment provides the legislature may, by general law, provide the assessment of homestead and specified non-homestead property may not increase if the just value of the property is less than the just value of the property on the preceding January 1st, subject to an adjustment in the assessed value due to changes, additions, reductions, or improvements to such property which are assessed as provided by general law. This amendment takes effect upon approval by the voters if approved at a special election held on the date of 2012 presidential preference primary. Don't know why that's in there. If approved at a special... Okay, well, I guess it didn't get through then. I don't know. If approved at a special election held on the date of the 2012 presidential preference primary, it shall operate retroactively to January 1, 2012, or if approved in the 2012 general election, shall take effect on January 1, 2013. This amendment reduces from 10% to 5% the limitation on the annual changes to assessment of non-homestead real property. This amendment takes effect upon approval of voters. If approved, okay, wait a minute, sorry about that. Looks, oh, they got the same thing. That's, again, this is why this thing is so confusing. It's absolutely crazy how they have this in here. The amendment takes effect upon approval of voters if it's a special election held on the presidential primary. Okay, same thing. Then it goes down. This amendment shall authorize general law to provide subject... Let's see. Sorry about that. Okay, I just lost my place here because I had to take care of that on the phone. Okay. This amendment shall authorize general law to provide, subject to conditions specified in such law, an additional homestead exemption to every person who establishes the right to receive homestead exemption provided in the Florida Constitution within 1 year after purchasing the homestead property and who has not owned property in the previous three calendar years to which Florida homestead exemption applies. The additional homestead exemption shall apply to all levies except school district levies. The additional exemption is an amount equal to 50% of the homestead property just value. Oh, this is why this is all nuts. I mean, listen to this garbage. Okay, January 1st of the year, homestead is established. The additional homestead may not exceed an amount equal to the median just value of all homestead property within the county where the property is located for the calendar year immediately preceding January 1 of the year of the homestead established. Just imagine somebody who reads this for the first time at the ballot box. They're going to say, forget it. The additional exemption shall apply for the shorter of 5 years or the year of the sale of the property. The amount of the additional exemption shall be reduced in each subsequent year to the amount equal to 20% of the amount of the additional exemption received in the year the homestead was established, or by an equal amount equal to the difference between the just value of the property and the assessed value of the property determined under Article 7, Section 4D, whichever is greater. And I still haven't finished reading this thing. Okay, whichever is greater, not more than one such exemption shall be allowed per homestead property at one time. The additional exemption applies to property purchased on or after January 1st, 2011. If approved by the voters at a special election, then they go into that thing again, 2012 primary. Okay. Okay, the additional exemption is not available in the sixth or the subsequent years after the first received. The amendment shall take upon approval. Okay. By the voters, if approved at the special election, there we go again. Five, the amendment also delays until 2023. The amendment also delays until 2023. The repeal currently scheduled to take effect in 2019 of constitutional amendments adopted in 2008, which limit assessment increases for specified non-homestead real property. This amendment delays until 2022 the submission of an amendment proposing the abrogation of such repeal to the voters. That's what an amendment for is. Are you awake?
Yeah, I'm here.
No, I mean, sir, that is so much crap. No, I'm not voting for that crap. Put it in plain language and put it in something that makes some kind of sense. You know.
We need to keep a copy of that for our example. Keep the whole copy of that for our example so that we can take it to the Supreme Court and tell them, because we have to do this. It's time to go ahead and make sure that our legislators do the work that we want them to do, and not twist us around so that we don't understand it. There's some lawyers up there who seem to think it. If they write it all in legalese and twist it around, and then they'll get the yes for that means no, and a no that means yes, and we have to stop that. We should have stopped that years and years ago, but you know, it's something how the state of California on the West Coast didn't come, Florida didn't ask them to send it to them on the East Coast. Seems to me like when there's a good good bill passing somewhere, that the states would share it with other states. And then again, there's that egotism problem. California may have sent it to all the states that this is what cleared, but then the egotism here, they just never went ahead and implemented it. So we'll work on that.
Yeah, and this, again, this amendment here would add two new sections to the Constitution. This is a major, major no. No to this craziness. And Chris Ann Hall says, I must reiterate my concern. Why is this not an issue of legislation? What if for some reason provision is omitted from this amendment and must be changed? Are we ready to pay for another constitutional amendment that would be necessary if the formulas incorporated needed adjusting? If the formulas needed adjusting? I mean, that's so much mess. No. Vote no. She's saying here, yeah, vote yes on this would reduce local government revenue by cutting in half the taxable rate on non-homestead properties, such as commercial income properties and second homes. This amendment is the state government telling local governments how to assess their taxes. Would reduce local government revenue by prohibiting increases in the assessed value of homestead property and certain other non-homestead properties in any year where the market values of the property decreases. Would reduce local government revenue by extending an additional homestead tax exemption to some first-time home buyers. But more to the point, this should be legislation, not constitutional amendments. So, okay. And then we're on to 5. Let's see here. It takes a few minutes because I have to go through all of the Spanish versions, which we should not have two different versions. But those of you who don't know this, who are listening, Florida, English is the legal language of Florida. You'd never know that, but that truly is. And so this, we shouldn't be having this, with the exception of the federal stuff, that there's a federal mandate to have it bilingual, the rest of the state stuff should not be in two languages. Okay, number 5, constitutional amendment, Article 5, will amend Article 5, Section 2, 11, and 12. And this is the state courts proposing a revision of Article 5 of the state constitution relating to the judiciary. The state constitution authorizes the Supreme Court to adopt rules for the practice and procedures in all courts. The constitution further provides that a rule of the court may be repealed by a general law enacted by 2/3 vote of the membership of each house of the legislature. The proposed constitutional amendment revision eliminates the requirement that a general law repealing a court rule passed by a 2/3 vote of each house, thereby providing the legislature may repeal a rule of court by a general law approved by the majority of vote of each house. Once again, that's a mouth, and there's more to it. I'm going to scroll down here. Okay. This proposed constitutional eliminates the requirement that the general law repealing the court rule passed by 2/3, therefore providing that the legislature may repeal the general law by a majority of vote of the legislature that expresses the policy behind the repeal. Okay. Legislature may repeal a rule of court by general law approved by a majority of each house of the legislature that expresses policy behind the. Okay, that by itself sounds crazy. The court could readopt the rule in conformity with the public policy expressed by the legislature. But if the legislature determines that a rule has been readopted and repeals the readopted rule, appeals and readopted rule, this proposed revision prohibits the courts from further readopting the repealed rule without the legislature's prior approval. Okay. under current law, rules of the judicial, rules of the Judicial Nominating Commission and the Judicial Qualification Commission may be repealed by general law enacted by a majority vote of the membership of each house of the legislature. Under the proposed version, a vote to repeal those rules is changed to repeal by general law enacted by a majority vote of the legislators present. And that's another key. Legislators present, not the whole thing, which that shouldn't be there. Under current law, the governor appoints a justice of the Supreme Court from a list of nominees provided. From a list of nominees provided by a judicial nominating commission, and the appointments by the governor are not subject to confirmation. This revision requires Senate confirmation of a justice of the Supreme Court before the appointee can take office. That part I actually like. I do think the Senate should confirm them. Confirm those kind of appointees. If the Senate votes not to confirm the appointment, the Judicial Nominating Commission must reconvene and may not renominate any person whose prior appointment to fill the same vacancy was not confirmed by the Senate. For the purpose of confirmation, the Senate may... Gosh, I think there's got to be a better way they could write this stuff. The Senate may meet at any time. If the Senate fails to vote on the appointment of a justice within 90 days, the justice will be deemed confirmed and will take office. Here's another way they can play dumb and not do anything to confirm somebody without confirming them. The Judicial Qualification Commission is an independent commission created by the state constitution to investigate and prosecute before the Florida Supreme Court alleged misconduct by a justice. Well, that's kind of interesting. Currently under the constitution, commission proceedings are confidential until formal charges are filed by the investigative panel of the commission. Once formal charges are filed, the formal charges and all further proceedings of the commission are public. I don't know why more of it wouldn't be public, but okay. Currently, the Constitution authorizes the House of Representatives to impeach a justice or judge. Further, the Speaker of the House and Representatives may request, and the Judicial Qualification Commission must make available all information in the commission's possession for use in deciding whether to impeach a justice or judge. This proposed revision requires the commission to make all of its files available to the Speaker of the House of Representatives, but provides that such files would remain confidential during the investigation by the House of Representatives. But provides that such files would remain confidential during the investigation and until such information is used in the pursuit of the impeachment of a justice or judge. This revision also removes the power of the governor to request files of the Judicial Qualifications Commission to conform to a prior constitutional change. This revision also makes technical and clarifying additions and deletions relating to the selection of Chief Justices of a circuit and relating to Judicial Qualifications Commission, and make other non-substantiated, conforming, and technical changes in the judicial article of the Constitution. I mean, there's bits and pieces of that actually sound like something I might want to consider, but I don't know. I don't feel like it's clear enough here exactly how this is going to work. So there's part of me that would be tempted to say yes, because I think the way we handle the assignments of these people needs to be confirmed by the Senate. So there's a part of me that leans yes, and I do think this is something more, to me, that makes more sense in a constitutional thing versus a legislative, how you appoint people to the bench. Let's see what Chris Inhall is saying. This perhaps is the First Amendment that is justifiably an amendment. However, I believe the drafters have tried to do too much in one bite. I would agree with that. And doing so may have contributed to the amendment's defeat. To understand this amendment, you must understand the problem that the amendment is attempting to fix. Many argue that putting the Florida Bar Association, a non-governmental entity built of judges and lawyers in charge of policy of policing judges and lawyers, is much like the patient running the asylum. This amendment attempts to put proper checks and balances within the court system by placing people in a greater control of their judges through the elected representatives. Vote yes for this amendment requires a Florida Senate to vote to confirm or reject gubernatorial appointments to the state Supreme Court. See, I happen to like that. I think that's they should. I don't think it should be simple appointments. Many states use this process as well as the federal government. It is designated to give people a say in their Supreme Court appointments through the legislative review. It would also help ensure better reflection of the values of the voters rather than one person, the whim of one person, the governor. Allows the legislature to repeal statewide judicial rulings adopted by the Supreme Court by a simple majority vote instead of two-thirds vote. This one here, I believe this provision could be seen as a violation of separation of powers and would bring about multiple lawsuits at the taxpayer's expense. Expand the ability of the state of House of Representatives to review confidential files about judges, even if they are not being considered for impeachment. This is an aspect of the model that checks and balances that is in place in our U.S. Constitution. This would allow elected representatives of the people to better police the activity of elected and appointed judges. So there's that one piece in there that I don't like, but in the overall scheme of things, I support most of what it says. And she, as she said here, she believes this is one that's justifiably an amendment to the Constitution. So that one here, this is the one that I may end up saying yes to. Okay. Any comments on that one, Charlie?
No, you're doing just fine.
It is such mumbo jumbo. And, I mean, I'm reading this off of the ballot off of the Orange County website, and you can't fit it all on one screen, so I apologize if I repeat some of it as I go through this, but there's no easy or pretty way to do this.
Well, you see, the whole thing is I'm listening to what you're saying, but when you get into that mumbo jumbo, it just throws me off to where I don't pay any attention.
And which
because that's,
exactly
that's the intention of the way they write through his ballots is
exactly.
Let's go ahead and write it so screwed up that people don't understand it. They're just going to ignore it.
Exactly. And if somebody told them to vote for it, they'll vote for it. Otherwise, they may just skip over it. Who knows what they'll do.
Yeah.
Okay, so
just may vote just to get it out of their head and say, well, I voted for it, and they don't care what it says either.
Yeah, and personally, if you're not going to take the time to read them, don't just skip over them. Don't vote anything, you know. Of course, in the overall scheme of things, I'd say if you're really not sure, vote no on all of them. Voting
right.
No is a safer answer. But, this one here, amendment. Number 6, Constitution Amendment, Article 1, Section 28, Prohibition on Public Funding of Abortions, Construction of Abortion Rights. This proposed amendment provides that public funds may not be expended for any abortion or for health benefit coverages and includes coverage of abortion. This prohibition does not apply to the expenditure required by federal law, a case in which a woman suffers from a physical disorder, physical injury, or physical illness that would place her in danger of death unless an abortion is performed or in a case of rape or incest. The proposed amendment provides that the state constitution may not be interpreted to create broader rights to an abortion than those contained in the United States Constitution. With respect to abortion, this proposed amendment overrules court decision which concludes that the right of the privacy under Article 1, Section 23 of the state constitution is broader in scope than that of the United States Constitution. Okay. Let's see. This amendment would add another section to the Constitution. This, again, is Chris Ann Hall. I understand the intention of this amendment. However, I do not believe it's effective. I believe it will cost the taxpayers a great deal and perform no relative significant function. Federal law prohibits the expenditure of federal funds for most abortions except rape, incest, threats to the mother's life. If passed, Amendment 6 would reiterate those prohibitions in the state constitution. Florida law already prohibits public funding from being spent on abortions. This amendment would not change any current abortion funding practice. This amendment spends tax dollars to simply show a majority of the state voters support existing governmental restrictions. We could probably do that with a poll and save some money. True. The only amendment that will do what the proponents of this amendment want to do is personhood. Is a personhood amendment. But personhood amendments are seen as extreme by opponents. This seems to be a compromise of no effect. Okay, voting yes would mean Florida's constitutional right to privacy is not applicable to abortion-related issues. This would open the door for multiple lawsuits that have the reasonable prospects of success. Removing a person's right to privacy is a two-way street. Do we want all persons seeking counseling regarding abortion issues to lose their rights to privacy, even seeking pro-life counseling? If we remove the right to privacy for adults in an aspect the word would be seen as medical procedure, we are giving government the authority to expand the loss of privacy to other medical procedures. Could allow more restrictive abortion laws to be found constitutional by Florida courts. Would restate the Florida Constitution, the federal and state law that prohibits public funds from being used for an abortion or health insurance coverage of an abortion. So, obviously, no on six. Doesn't need to be there. It's a waste. Okay, let's see. I think I have to go to a new page here. Let's see. Let's go to page 3. Which is religious number amendment 8, religious freedom. This is a little bit shorter one. Proposing an amendment to the state constitution providing that no individual or entity may be denied on the basis of religious identity or belief, governmental benefits, funding, or other support except as required by the First Amendment to the United States Constitution, and deleting the prohibition against using revenues from the public treasury, directly or indirectly, in aid of any church or religious denomination or in aid of any sanctuary institution. Okay. Let me just read that last one there again. First Amendment 3. Deleting the prohibition against using revenues from the public treasury, directly or indirectly, in aid of any church or religious denomination or in aid of any sanctioned institution. Section. No, that's not sanctuary. I keep wanting to say sanctuary. Institution. Okay, let's see what America offers the greatest protection of religious freedom anywhere in the world. Florida's Constitution mirrors these protections. We do not need greater religious freedom. We need greater protection from government's intrusion in the church. Amendment 8 is not about religious freedom. It is about religious funding and would invite further government control on the church. Not only that, because all government funds must be used in a non-discriminatory manner, this amendment would require the government to fund all religions, Islamic, Satanic, and other groups of people calling themselves religion. Is that how you want your tax dollars to be spent? For an in-depth explanation, visit, and she's got some more information on this one on her website, chrisannhall.com. A vote yes on amendment would repeal the no-aid provision of the Florida Constitution and allow public money to go to private religious institutions. No, we don't want that. That means taxpayers will fund all religious institutions, allowing the funding of Islam and all extreme cult religions. Do you want to financially support religious actions like those of the Westboro Baptist Church who protest military funerals? Would not expand religious freedom. We already have the religious freedom in the state and in the nation. This amendment is not about freedom. It's about funding. So vote no on 8. And I think that the key line is this is not about religious freedom. It's about religious funding. That is truly what this is about. No. I do not want my taxes going to the church. Okay, the next one. Any comments on that one, Charlie?
Nope.
Seems to be pretty simple on that one. Let's see. Number 9. This one comes up with another military one. Okay, 9. Article 7, Section 6. Article 12, Section 32. I notice those get hit a lot by this stuff this time. Homestead property tax exemption for surviving spouse of military veteran or first responder. Proposing an amendment to the state constitution to authorize the legislature to provide by general law ad valorem homestead property tax relief to surviving spouse of a military veteran who died from service-connected causes while on active duty, or the surviving spouse of the first responder who died in the line of duty. The amendment authorizes the legislature to totally exempt or partially exempt each surviving spouse homestead property from ad valorem taxation. The amendment defines a first responder as a law enforcement officer, a correctional officer, a firefighter, an emergency medical technician, or a paramedic. This amendment shall take place January 1, 2013. I think this one's going to be pretty simple. This again should not be a constitutional amendment; it should be a legislative act. Let's see what Chris Ann Hall says about it. This amendment would add another section to the Constitution. Again, why is this not an issue of legislation? What if some necessary provision is omitted from the amendment and must be changed? We are ready to pay for another constitutional amendment when this one needs to be repealed or amended. A yes vote for this amendment would grant full homestead property tax relief to surviving spouses or first responders die in the line of duty. Would enshrine in the state constitution a law that currently offers full property tax relief to surviving spouses of veterans who died while on active duty. Would allow spouses whose partners died before the passage of the amendment to be eligible for the tax exemption. Again, it's an item of legislation not here, so no on 9. Okay. Like I say, most of these are no.
Yeah, that's what Chris Ann is suggesting, too.
Yes, exactly.
And she is a wonderful lawyer. And she's a great person.
Let's see. Okay, Constitution number 10. Yeah, she's very much a constitutionalist. That's the whole point. She's obviously very knowledgeable attorney, but she's a constitutional attorney. She actually focuses on the constitutionality of these things. Versus whatever the whims of a bunch of people in public office.
Right.
Okay. Number 10, Article 7, Section 3, Article 12, Section 32, once again, tangible personal property tax exemption. Proposing an amendment to the state constitution to provide an exemption from ad valorem taxes levied by counties, municipalities, school districts, and other local governments on tangible personal property if the assessed value of an owner's tangible personal property is greater than $25,000 but less than $50,000. The new exemption, if approved by voters, will take effect on January 1st, 2013 and apply to the 2013 tax roll and subsequent tax rolls. Authorize the county or municipality for the purposes of its respective levy and as provided by general law to provide tangible personal property tax exemptions by ordinance. This is in addition to other statewide tangible personal property tax exemptions provided by the Constitution and this amendment. Okay. This goes back to Chris Ann Hall. This amendment would add another section to the Constitution, another legislative issue, not a constitutional issue. Okay, vote yes on this. We double the tax exemptions on tangible personal property, furniture, fixtures, machinery, tools, signs, equipment. Would allow cities and counties to grant additional tangible tax personal tax exemptions. Reduce local property tax revenues across the state by an estimated $61 million combined over the first 3 years it's implemented. Okay. And, you know, this here allows the people at the local county level to pick and choose who they want to give exemptions to. So another no to that one, no to number 10, tangible tax. They can do all this through a legislative process, and if it's corrupted, it's a lot easier to change it and go after those who corrupt the process.
Right.
You know, and let's see. I've only got one more here because I shouldn't say that. Let's see. Number 11. Yeah, I've got two more. Sorry. And I think we're going to have just time to get done. Number 11, Constitutional Amendment, Article 7, Section 6, additional homestead exemption, low-income seniors who maintain long-term residency on property equal to assessed values. Okay. This one here, proposing an amendment to the state constitution to authorize the legislature by general law and subject to conditions set forth in the general law to allow counties and municipalities to grant an additional homestead exemption equal to the assessed value of homestead property if the property has a just value of less than $250,000 to an owner who has maintained permanent residency on a property for not less than 25 years, who has attained an age of 65, and who has a low household income as defined by general law. And another, as she says, and I already knew what she was going to say on this one, another legislative issue, not a constitutional issue. A vote for yes on this would authorize cities and counties to grant full homestead exemption to certain low-income seniors, would require a supermajority vote by local governments to grant exemption, would reduce tax revenues to local governments across the state by an estimated $18.5 million combined over the first 2 years of being implemented. So, again, it doesn't belong in the state constitution. No. No on a number 11. And 12 is the last one here, and it's a short one. Okay, number 12, Constitutional Amendment, Article 9, Section 7, Appointment of Student Body President to Board of Governors of the State University System. This one's another crazy one to me. This is just whatever. Proposing an amendment to the state constitution to replace the president of the Florida Student Association with the chair of the Council of State University Student Body Presidents as the student member of the Board of Governors of the state university system, and to require that the Board of Governors organize such council of state university student body presidents. Now, if that did not make you get motion sickness or get dizzy, I don't know what would.
Read it again.
Okay. It's called Appointment of Student Body President to Board of Governors of the State University System. Appointment of Student Body President to Board of Governors of the State University System. Okay. Proposing an amendment to the state constitution to replace the president of the Florida Student Association with the chair of the Council of State University Student Body Presidents. There again, that's a mouthful. As the student member of the Board of Governors of the State University System, and to recognize that the Board of Governors organize such council of state university student body presidents. You got to get motion sickness reading that.
No, that's okay. That's why. Well, you were doing that wonderful talking and indoctrinating people on how screwed up everything is. I was sending the email out to people in regards to what we were talking about, doing a petition for next year, for the next election. And I got it out to about maybe 40 people. So now we just have to hope we get somebody to do the ballot language, the summary, take it to the Supreme Court, get it approved. But then I send it to places like True the Vote, No New Taxes up in the Panhandle, who has that radio show every Saturday. I send it to a couple of my, few of the veterans that I know. And I send it to Vicky and a bunch of others who are very active, like Edna. And also Save America Foundation. And I need to send it to Keith. I forgot to put Keith in there, but I'll get it to him because I'll send some more out tomorrow.
Okay.
But I just thought I'd let you know that it's on its way, so we'll see what kind of feedback we get. Because if we can get it written up and all this type of thing, with all of these organizations having meetings and all the tea parties across there, we should be able to get the $650,000 or $700,000 we need to bring it down to a reasonable amount.
And I'm going to let you take that one up to coordinate that, because that's going to take some work to do that. It's going to take some time.
Yeah.
Let me go ahead.
Yeah, I'm saying I'm just putting the feeler out now to see if we get the interest on it. If we get the interest on it, then fine. I mean, that would be a great thing for this country, for this state, so that we understand what's going on and we don't have all these people pulling the wool over our eyes. Because with people coming out of school nowadays, they have very little knowledge of what's going on in this country, and they trust everybody, how would you say, in government explicitly, and they're finding out that you can't do that. So anyway, we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. Okay?
Okay. Let me go ahead and finish up what Chris Ann Hall said about this one, then we'll be finished with the amendments. And then I will have gone through all the amendments like I said I was going to do. Okay. Ironically, this amendment would create a constitutional requirement that would force the establishment of a bureaucracy. Great. Just what we need. The whole thing is pretty stupid. A vote yes on the Amendment 12 would create a new council of student body presidents from which the student representative of the Board of Governors would be selected, would remove the Florida Student Association president from the Board of Governors, would require all state university student body presidents to participate in the newly created council. It's just nonsense. Doesn't belong there. So no on that one as well.
Mm-hmm. And now I just got something too. Here's something too. Now some from somebody else from Vicky sent this from somebody else who was also reading it. And he said, yes, on 1, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 10. That's on the amendments. And no on 2, 8, 9, 11, and 12.
So who said this?
Let's see. Lloyd W. Bailey, Jr., that's the guy's name on there. I don't know who he is. But I'm sure you got a copy of it, too. So you can probably read that maybe Thursday on the show to see what his comments are so people have a better idea, too. Okay?
Well, we got about...
All right, let me read what he says on 1.
Okay.
Constitution Amendment Review for on November 2012. After spending some time on the amendments, I have arrived at the following conclusion. Amendment 1 is a stepping stone to state nullification of an unconstitutional federal law on medical care. An affirmative vote would support the state legislature if they were to nullify the federal law. Amendment 1, number 1, yes. Amendment 2, in effect, shifts the property tax burden to the remaining taxpayers. And we either need to abolish property taxes entirely or require universal payment. If all property owners have to pay, then we can't count on their support to abolish or lower taxes. Amendment number 2, no. Amendment 3, limits government by limiting revenue. The best policy in absence of abolishing improper roles for government is to starve government of our money. Amendment 3, yes. Amendment 4, does what Amendment 3 does by denying government of our money. I do not favor the homestead exemption to first-time home buyers, but it does starve local government, and the overall bill works against government. Amendment number 4, yes. So he's got a different point of view there. Amendment 5, improves the checks and balance that the legislature has over the courts. Judges and lawyers do not like it, which is all the more reason to support it. We must restrain the courts and need something often neglected but similar to the federal constitution in Article 3, Section 2, where the legislature can restrict appellate jurisdiction of the courts. Amendment 5 is a yes. Now, that sounded kind of convoluted on his answer there. I'm going to have to read that again. Amendment 6 is an obvious yes. Government money should not be used for abortions, and there should be no exceptions, and parents of minors should be informed. Amendment 6, yes. How am I doing, okay?
Sure. You're doing great.
Amendment 8 would allow government to have influence on churches because with the money, there is always control. For government to provide for one group, it must take from another. It is not theirs to give. Additionally, I do not want my tax dollars to fund the GAYA, Voodoo, or Santeria, all which might be considered religions by government definition. The solution is to restore education to the local level with no funding outside of the county, and with this, there would be local control. The federal courts must be limited to their jurisdiction. Amendment 8, no. Amendment 9.
What do you
9,
say about? Okay, never mind. Go ahead.
Number Amendment 8, no. What do you want to say on it? You want me to read
no,
it again?
No, that's okay. I was thinking of number 7, but that's the one they omitted. I was
okay.
Writing them down here. It's number
okay.
7 that got omitted. Okay.
Amendment 9 is the worst one of all. All must pay property taxes with no exceptions, which would aid our effort to abolish property taxes entirely. For only citizens that are currently plundered will have an interest in abolishing the tax. Again, the wording is deceptive, and the amendment should read, are the citizens willing to pay the property taxes of those that we vote to exempt? I posted the following in the Gainesville Sun today. Property taxes in corporate project number 1 of the Communist Manifesto and should be abolished. There is no such thing as property ownership as long as this tax continues. At a better time in our nation's history, property was not taxed. Without property rights, there can be no human rights. Taxes should be very low and government should be very limited. Government should only perform functions that the private sector cannot. There are better and fairer ways to tax. Amendment number 9 is a no. Now, that what he put in the Gainesville Sun today is quite interesting. I thought I liked what he wrote.
Okay.
You want me to read it
yeah.
again? Huh?
Well, we can go back to that one after, but let's go ahead and get to his other 10, 11, and 12. So the
amendment number 10. Amendment number 10, it reduces the revenue to local government and ends the unfair punishment of businesses. This amendment is not popular with local government, which is exactly why we should support it. Especially in Alachua County, property should not be taxed. Amendment number 10, yes. Amendment number 11 should be worded. Will you vote to pay the property taxes of seniors that fail to limit government on their watch, did not financially plan for retirement, and now desire to plunder those that are left to clean up the mess that they made with our country? Amendment number 11, no. Amendment number 12 should read, should immature college pranksters be placed on a governing board to render the decisions regarding funding of the government schools? Generations of students have been indoctrinated with Marxism by communist professors and union teachers. It is not wise to put the fox in charge of the hen house. Amendment 12 is a no. And then he's got, in conclusion, most of these amendments should not exist and result from pusillanimous and craven politicians' failure to do their job. Democratic decisions are historically bad, but in absence of reasonable leaders, we must work with what we have. Any opportunity to strike back at government or limit our self-serving and irresponsible leadership should be taken. These amendments will only render short-term relief, and we will continue to wane as a state and country until the civic and moral responsibility is realized by the citizens. Freedom cannot exist without morality, and it is a civic and moral duty to be involved with our government. Government is a necessary evil and must be limited. This requires attention on a weekly basis, and the responsibility falls primarily on the head of household in a Christian nation. Pretty nice writing. I liked it.
Yeah, and I find it interesting. In the overall scheme of things, he seems to agree with what we've been saying, except he's willing
yeah.
to use the Constitution to do what the legislature should do. And I find it interesting. He's saying most of these amendments shouldn't be there, but he's actually supporting over 50% of them.
Right, yeah. Now, I posted the following in the game. Okay, let me read this number one on amendment number 9 that he posted the following in the Gainesville Sun today. And this is amendment number 9 is the worst of all. And here's how he posted that it should read. Property taxes in corporate project number one of the Communist Manifesto and should be abolished. There is no such thing as property ownership as long as this tax continues. At a better time in our nation's history, property was not taxed. Without property rights, there can be no human rights. Taxes should be very low and government should be very limited. Government should only perform functions that the private sector cannot. There are better and fairer ways to tax. Amendment number 9, no. I just thought it was interesting the way he did everything.
Yeah, it's true. You know, Ron Paul has said that for years, that we, you know,
right.
because of the way we have property taxes, we don't truly ever own property. We don't have the right to own property. We rent the property from the county or the local municipality, state, whoever it is. If you don't pay that property tax, they take your property away. And that's so unconstitutional and so against what the founding fathers believed in.
Right. Now, here's something that just came over, too. Social Security now called federal benefit payment / entitlement. Have you noticed your Social Security check is now referred to as a federal benefit payment? I'll be part of the 1% to forward this. I'm forwarding it because it touches a nerve in me, and I hope it will in you. Please keep passing it on until everyone in our country has read it. The government now is now referring to our Social Security checks as a federal benefit payment. This isn't a benefit. It's earned income. Not only did we all contribute to Social Security, but our employers did too. It totaled 15% of our income before taxes. If you average $30,000 per year over your working life, that's close to $180,000 invested in Social Security. If you calculate the future value of your monthly investment, of your monthly investment in Social Security, $375 a month, including both your and your employer's contribution, at a meager 1% interest rate compounded monthly, after 40 years of working, you'd have more than $1.3+ million saved. This is your personal investment. Upon retirement, if you took out only 3% per year, you'd receive $39,318 per year or $3,277 per month. That's almost three times more than today's average Social Security benefit of $1,230 per month, according to the Social Security Administration. And your retirement fund would last more than 33 years until you're 98, if you retire at age 65. I can only imagine how much better most average income people could live in retirement if our government had just invested our money in low-risk, interest-earning accounts. Instead, the folks in Washington pulled off a bigger Ponzi scheme than Bernie Madoff. They took our money and used it elsewhere. They forgot that it was our money they were taking. They didn't have a referendum to ask us if we wanted to lend the money to them, and they didn't pay interest on the debt they assumed. And recently, they've told us that the money won't support us for very much longer. Okay. But it is our fault they misused our investments. But is it our fault they misused our investments? And now, to add insult to injury, they're calling it a benefit, as if we never worked to earn every penny of it. Just because they borrowed the money doesn't mean that our investments were a charity. Let's take a stand. We have earned our right to Social Security and Medicare. Demand that our legislator bring some sense into our government. Find a way to keep Social Security and Medicare going for the sake of that 92% of our population who need it. Then call it what it is, our earned retirement income. 99% of people won't forward this. Will you? Oh, I'm forwarding it.
Yeah,
after
please
I
forward
get
it
his...
to me, because I'm going to forward it to everybody too. Because that's the truth. We we were forced to give them money for forced retirement is what we were forced to pay into, and now
right.
they want to act like they're giving us a handout. No, it's not a handout. The handout
uh-huh.
is all the freebies these idiots in Congress get: free insurance, free their pension plans. They don't pay Social Security, so they're the ones that are getting the entitlement, not us.
Mm-hmm.
That part needs to be made, so that was
right.
excellent. I'll definitely forward it, so please forward that to me. It was we're down to just a few minutes here. We've got about 6 minutes. There was something I wanted to read, and I thought you would appreciate this. This is John Adams, quotes from John Adams. I was going back looking at different founders and seeing some of their quotes, like I did the other show. Uh-huh. And this there's just a couple of them here. And, we talk about moral values, where religion plays, God-fearing people. And uh-huh. this country definitely was founded on moral beliefs, God-fearing people. But I'll tell right. you, there's nothing more disgusting as I see these people in public office who constantly do the evil deeds while they pretend to be praying in church. The hypocrisy of the so-called God-fearing people who are in Congress and the president mm-hmm. and whoever else, the public office, they are truly the evildoers. There's nothing more evil than to profess to be this moral, holy individual while you are stabbing everybody in the back and sacrificing. Right. But here's mm-hmm. a couple of quotes from John Adams. Our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other. That is a powerful statement. Our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other. We no longer have a moral and religious government. And how does that reflect on we the people? Are we still a moral and religious people? You have to kind of wonder where our values have gone. But I thought that was interesting. There's one other one here. Mm-hmm. Let's see. There's a couple more, but I'll stop and just don't have much more time anyway. Power always thinks that it is doing God's service when it violates all of his laws.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that is just, again, that is such a powerful statement, and it is so true to what we face today. Power always thinks that it is doing God's service when it is violating all his laws.
Right. Send that. Yeah. Make sure you send that to me, or put that in a computer and send that to me, because I think we can use it. I'm seriously thinking about starting to do something with those T-shirts, like One Nation Under God did.
Yes.
Well, I think that some of those would be good if we could get enough people to help put in for it and do it as fundraisers and that type of thing.
Oh, definitely. And just amazing the things that they understood so well. Right. Let's see here. There's another one. I must study politics and war, that my sons uh-huh. may have liberty to study mathematics and philosophy. I must study uh-huh. politics and war, that my sons may have liberty to study mathematics and philosophy.
Uh-huh.
Let us tenderly and kindly cherish, therefore, that the means of knowledge. Let us dare to read, think, speak, and write.
Uh-huh.
And that's what we're here doing, trying to. Let's see. Fear is the foundation of most governments. That's what this government does to us. It tries to put the fear in people. And and it was Jefferson, I think, who made the comment about when there's fear, there's tyranny. When the people fear the government, there's tyranny. When the government fears the people, there's justice or liberty. Okay, let's see.
All right.
Here. Yeah. Let's see here. Yeah, just
58. Okay.
Go ahead.
God bless America. God bless our troops, ladies and gentlemen. Social Security is not a federal benefit program. We earned it. Now's the time to get together and actually take action. Because when your government elected officials try to go ahead and change something because they screwed up, it's time to go after the screw-ups and put all that money that they've stolen from us out of their pockets, out of their personal pockets, since they are now the ones representing us, and put it into the Social Security Trust Fund, and we'll develop it from scratch. Then we will have everybody else will be safe. We can do it. We just have to get together and do it. Take care. God bless.
The last few minutes. Make sure you send that message to Romney and Ryan, because they're the ones also calling Social Security an entitlement program. They don't seem to understand what entitlement means.
Well, I don't have their email address right handy right now. So
we'll
get it
website.
To them. Yep. I went there and I... I don't have. I went to their website, and they don't have a one where we can just write it to. You got to do it inside the computer. But
exactly.
We'll get
they have a phone number too. You can call their campaign office. You can also call them, and I've done that before. So
yeah, I was calling too, but one that I called 888, it says out of was out of the area.
Well,
I'll talk
to
you later.
We'll have to check on that. We're just about out of time here. I'll show you how to do that. I'll tell you how you can contact them. I'll find the information and I'll give it to you. Okay. Anyway, on that note, thank you for tuning in. As always, may God bless and protect the USA. Good night.